The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I am your hostess, Misty Young, here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, broadcasting out of Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. This place is about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. It's the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and truly the nicest people you'll ever meet. Where the mountains and the old-growth redwoods meet the sea, Harbor Brookings is home to me. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Before we get started and delving into our nutrition topic today, I'd like to say thank you to the entire KCIW sound engineering and production crew. These folks are amazing. I'm an amateur, and they make this sound like professional broadcasting, and I gotta tell you, it's wonderful. So thank you to our team. Now, today I'm gonna talk about health. I'm gonna talk about nutrition. As I say every time, and you heard in the disclaimer earlier, I'm not a doctor, and I'm not a scientist. I'm a nutrition nerd. I do hold a nutritional therapist certificate from the Health Sciences Academy and a plant-based nutrition certificate from E. Cornell University's T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. Now, one of the favorite people in the whole wide world who I love to study because he's only and always about evidence-based nutrition is Dr. Michael Greger. Now, check it out. Today, what we're going to talk about is how not to die from heart disease. What? How not to die from heart disease? Look, everybody has to die, right? We all have to die. It's going to happen. You're going to die. I'm going to die. We're all going to die. But can you choose how you die? Maybe, maybe not. Do you have to go down the path to cancer or heart disease or diabetes or dementia or any of those heinous diseases? You don't. In a lot of ways, you carry control for what happens in your body based on what you put into your body. So if you just think about it for a second, you would never drink gasoline, right? You know, if you drink gasoline, it's going to burn going down. Your throat's going to hurt. It's going to feel terrible. Your stomach's going to retch. You're going to be in a bad way. But what about milk? You don't think about milk, right? Milk is like, oh, it's milk. It's good for me. Well, no, no. Milk is made for cows. Milk, cow's milk, is designed to take a 60-pound infant cow into a 400-pound being in just 6 months. It's not designed for you, but it's about the same as gasoline in terms of what you're putting into your body. So let's talk a little bit about Dr. Greger. I always love to set it up with who is Dr. Greger? Why does he matter? What does what he does matter? Why does that matter? Well, let's start off with this. Most deaths in the United States are preventable. Now, this comes from Dr. Greger's evidence-based eating guide. Okay, so Dr. Michael Greger, he's published the evidence-based eating guide. And before I finish reading this part of this to you or sharing it with you, I really want you to know this whole series, whenever we're talking about nutrition on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, it's because we're interested in what does the science say? What does the evidence say? Not what does the headline in some magazine at the grocery store say? Not what does the headline on the newspaper say? And never, ever, ever, what does some funky headline say on Dr. Google? Dr. Google doesn't exist. We think Dr. Google exists, but it doesn't. Now, what does exist is Dr. Michael Greger's evidence-based eating guide and his phenomenal website, nutritionfacts.org. So you're going to hear me quote today from a number of different sources on nutritionfacts.org, and I want you to make a note of it right now. Just go ahead and write it down, nutritionfacts.org. It's always and only about evidence-based nutrition. This guy reads and publishes everything. Here's what he says. Most deaths in the United States are preventable, and they are related to what we eat. The number one cause of death in America is the American diet. That's mind-blowing, isn't it? He says, many people assume that our manner of death is pre-programmed into our genes. So high blood pressure by 55, heart attacks at 60, maybe even cancer at 70, and so on. But for most of the leading causes of death, the science shows that our genes often account for only 10 to 20% of the risk at most. That means maybe as much as 90, 80 to 90% of our risk for those other diseases is coming from something other than genetics. And the most likely candidate, and I'm going to show you how and why, is our diet. So for example, When people move from low-risk to high-risk countries, their disease rates almost always change to those of the new environment. In other words, new diet, new diseases. But the reverse is also true. So if we're eating the standard American diet and we switch to a diet higher in whole plant foods, such as fruits and vegetables, this can lead to fewer diseases. Look, you always hear me talking about apples, right? Like, oh, I say an apple a day keeps the doctor away, but how about two apples a day, three apples a day? Could you be really wild, wicked, radical and eat four apples in a day? Wow! Wouldn't that be amazing? When you think about things like carrots, you know, you might think, oh yeah, I eat carrots. Well, how often? Once a week, once a month, once a year? What if you go to the market and you buy one of those little 3-pound bags of carrots, the long kind, not the baby carrots. Those things are disgusting. They're just big carrots that have been cut down and shaven into cute little shapes that make it seem like they're easier on you or that they're actually some kind of baby carrot. They're not. They're just big carrots cut down and shaven. And they lose a lot of nutritional value because they're oftentimes, you've seen them, they're kind of white on the edges. They're all dried out and yucky. Eat real carrots. How awesome is it to take a real long whole carrot into your sink, clean it up, peel it if you must, and then just gnaw on it. Have one of those every day. Have two of them. What if you had 10 pounds of carrots in a week? I know that seems unbelievable, right? But listen, adhering to just four simple healthy lifestyle factors can have a very strong impact on the prevention of chronic diseases. Here are those four things: not smoking, not being obese, getting a half hour of exercise a day, and eating healthier, which is defined as consuming more fruits, veggies, and whole grains, but less meat. Those four factors alone were found to account for 78% of chronic disease risk. Does that blow you away? That blows me away. Because I think most of us feel like, oh, I'm a victim. I got some kind of disease. Oh gosh, this happened to me. No, it happened through you. Oftentimes, not every time. Sure, there's a genetic factor, but 78% of the time, chronic disease risk was found to happen because we're not eating correctly. So maybe it's time we stop blaming genetics and focus on the risk factors that are directly under our control. We have the power. It turns out a more plant-based diet may help prevent and in some cases even help treat or reverse every single one of our 15 leading causes of death, including high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, and more. So I always tell you about Dr. Greger's story, and I want to be sure to tell you his story again today. He says, "The inspiration for my work all started with my grandma. I was just a kid when my grandmother was diagnosed with end-stage heart disease and sent home to die. She already had had so many bypass surgeries and was so scarred up inside that there was nothing more the surgeons could do. So, confined in a wheelchair with crushing chest pain, her life was over at age 65. Then Dr. Greger's grandmother heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, one of our early lifestyle medicine pioneers. And what happened next is chronicled actually in Pritikin's biography. He said, my grandma was one of the death's door people. She arrived in a wheelchair, and from Nathan Pritikin's biography, he quotes, Mrs. Greger had heart disease, angina, which is heart pain, and claudication. Her condition was so bad, she could no longer walk without great pain in her chest and legs. Within 3 weeks, though, she was not only out of her wheelchair, but was walking 10 miles a day. That's amazing. So Dr. Greger says, as I grew older, I began to understand the significance of my grandmother's near miraculous recovery. As soon as we stop eating the artery-clogging foods that contribute to heart disease, our bodies can start to heal themselves. He says, I made it my life's mission to educate millions about evidence-based eating, and I hope that I can do for your family what Nathan Pritikin did for my family. Now, Dr. Greger continues, on my nonprofit website, nutritionfacts.org, I strive to read through every issue of every English-language nutrition journal in the world so busy folks like you don't have to. There are videos on more than 2,000 health and nutrition topics. Every single one of them is free. There are no ads, no products to sell, and there are new videos and articles uploaded every day on the latest in evidence-based nutrition. It's the tool I wish I had in my medical training, Dr. Greger says. He wraps up this piece, which remember, this is the evidence-based eating guide, and I want you to get a copy of this. So you're going to go to nutritionfacts.org And you're going to look up evidence-based eating guide and you'll be able to download it. This thing is so cool. I'm going to give you a couple more pieces of information out of it before we move over to how not to die from heart disease. He says, for those of us who grew up eating the standard American diet, which they say is called SAD, right? S-A-D, standard American diet, starting to eat healthfully can be a big shift. I know it was for me, Dr. Greger says. Thankfully, I was able to escape SAD's clutches before any overt health problem arose 29 years ago. Looking back, he says, I view that as one of the best decisions of my life. Eating healthier is easier than you think. It's inexpensive and it just might save your life. So that's what Dr. Greger says in his introduction to the evidence-based eating guide. And then he gives his strategy for how you can eat. He calls it dining by traffic light. And I'm going to give you the quick and dirty information on dining by traffic light, because this makes it so easy if you think about red light foods, yellow light foods, and green light foods, okay? Because so many folks ask me, I mean, I get questions all the time. They're like, this is a crazy one. People will often say to me, but cheese, oh my God, I love cheese. I love it. And then they say the crazy thing, I'm addicted to it. And I say, that's not crazy. And yes, in fact, you are addicted to cheese. Check this out. This sounds really crazy, right? But cheese, milk, cow's milk, has a component in it called casomorphin, which is very similar to morphine, and it creates the baby cow to have an addiction to the mother's milk. The cow wants the mother's milk. The cow needs the mother's milk. And so the cow is seeking the baby cow to get the milk from the mother. It is addictive. There is an addictive quality. When you think about cheese is concentrated milk. So you're getting an even higher dosage of that casomorphin, which is going to make you want cheese. So when you hear someone say, or maybe your own self say, I'm addicted to cheese, you're right. Now, dining by traffic light, Dr. Greger says the healthiest diet is one that maximizes the intake of foods as grown. So in other words, whole plant-based food, and minimizes the intake of processed and animal-based foods. The dining by traffic light system can help you crowd your diet full of healthy options while minimizing the foods that contain less healthy components like sodium, added sugar, trans fat, saturated fat, and cholesterol. So just as on the road, green light foods mean go, yellow light foods mean to use caution, and red light means stop and think before putting that in your mouth. Here's the red light foods. Ready? Red light. Ultra-processed foods and processed animal foods, for example. Cookies, chips, candy, soda, hot dogs, bacon, lunch meat, sausages, and oil. That sounds like the entire thing that I just read sounds like a standard American diet high school lunchbox, right? So red light foods, cookies, chips, candy, soda, hot dog, bacon, lunch meat, sausages, and oil. Wow, that's like right straight out of a school box lunch. Or, you know, you get on the school bus and that's what you see in every box. He says, ideally, these foods should be avoided. Just like running red lights in the real world, you may be able to get away with it once in a while, but you wouldn't want to make a habit out of it. Now, what about yellow light food? Yellow light foods are processed plant foods and unprocessed animal foods. So, for example, bread and steak, yellow light. Now, ideally, yellow light foods should be minimized. The preferred role of yellow light foods is to maximize the intake of green light foods. Okay, ready to hear what the green light foods are? You already know what's coming, right? You know, here we go. Unprocessed plant foods, closest to how they come in nature. So for example, whole grains, beans and legumes, nuts, seeds, fruits, vegetables, as well as herbs and spices. These are unprocessed plant foods, and as they come from nature themselves, they tend to have much more protective nutrients, whereas processed foods tend to have disease-promoting factors. So remember, I'm always saying to you, every bite of food you put in your mouth is either fighting disease or feeding disease. You want to be fighting disease. So for the traffic light system, think of unprocessed as nothing bad added and nothing good taken away. Eat as many green light foods as you can. Eat as little yellow light foods as you can, and ideally avoid red light foods, at least on a daily basis. So think of eating junk as eating for entertainment. You don't go on a roller coaster for transportation, but for amusement. And junk food can take your taste buds for a thrill ride too, but just like it would be unhealthy to live on a roller coaster all the time, it's also unhealthy to live off of red light junk. Save it for a special occasion. Because the problem with all or nothing thinking is that it keeps people from even taking the first steps. Now, if you've listened in on the Ocean Mist Power Hour before, first of all, thank you for being part of our dialogue, our ongoing discussion and education platform here to talk about healthy, nutritious eating. And having been part of this program, then you know I'm always talking about eating plants and always talking about avoiding animal products of every kind. And what Dr. Greger is saying is, give yourself some grace. Now, I'm usually a little more strict about that, right? I give myself grace too, but I haven't eaten animal products. Well, I better qualify that. I have had no meat in almost 8 years. And very rarely, you know, if I go to someone's house and they have served up a dinner and it has cheese in it, look, I don't push myself away from the table and go, I don't eat cheese. I don't throw a fit, right? Come on. So you have to be thoughtful about it. And you have to be, you know, as if Dr. Greger says, the problem with all or nothing thinking is it keeps people from even taking the first steps. So give yourself some grace. Try just doing something like a meatless Monday. Try just having maybe animal products once or twice a week instead of once or twice a day. Try to cut back a lot. Because if the thought of never having another pepperoni pizza turns into an excuse for not making the first steps toward eating healthy, then focus on just scaling back on the pizza, right? You got to start somewhere. It's really what we eat on a daily basis that has the greatest impact on our overall health. Now, what you eat on special occasions is insignificant compared to what you eat day in and day out. Your body and my body has a remarkable ability to recover from sporadic insults as long as you're not habitually poking it with a fork. So rather than thinking black and white or all or nothing, focus on crowding out less healthful options and adding in more healthful green light foods. Now, a couple of things that I want to encourage you to do. Again, go visit nutritionfacts.org and then hop onto the App Store on your phone, because this is a really great thing to do. Go hop on the App Store and find Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen. Now, Dr. Greger is spelled Dr. D-R Greger, G-R-E-G-E-R, and he has an app called the Daily Dozen app. It's super easy. It really super, super easy. Like, you just click a little checkbox. He's going to ask you to be checking whether you're eating beans, berries, other fruits, cruciferous vegetables, greens, other vegetables, flax seeds, nuts, water, that kind of thing. And you just open up the app, boop, boop, boop. There's 24 things he wants you to check off. And you want to get to all 24 a day. So you kind of make it like a game, right? I mean, it's not really a game. It's a checklist. But it's really a cool way to just keep track of your progress. And does it mean you have to open the app 24 times a day? Nah. At the end of the day, you whip out the app and you say, did I have any beans? Yeah, gee, I had some tofu. That's beans. Maybe you had pinto beans, or maybe you had some hummus, garbanzo beans. Boom, boom, boom. Three check marks. Did I have any berries? Yeah, I put strawberries on my oatmeal today. Boom, check that box. Do you have any other fruit? Yeah, I had an apple and a banana. Boom, boom, check those boxes. You know, and on the grains part, boom, you're going to check for the oatmeal that you had. So it's really easy and a super great way to keep track of what you're eating on a daily basis. Because here's the thing. There's only one way of eating that has ever been proven to reverse heart disease in the majority of patients. Only one. And that is a diet centered around whole plant foods. Now, we're going to talk today about heart disease. That's really what I want to talk about, is how not to die from heart disease. I know it sounds so crazy, right? So how not to die? Well, the most likely reason most of our loved ones will die is heart disease, because it's still up to each of us to make our own decisions as to what we eat and how to live. But we should make those choices consciously, always educating ourselves about the predictable consequences of our actions. So atherosclerosis, which is hardening of the arteries, begins in childhood. Isn't that crazy? By age 10, the arteries of nearly all kids raised on the standard American diet already have fatty streaks, the first stages of heart disease. Then the plaques start forming in our 20s, get worse in our 30s, and then can start killing us off. In our heart, it's called a heart attack. In our brain, it can manifest as a stroke. So if there's anyone participating here that's older than age 10, the choice isn't whether or not to eat healthy to prevent heart disease. It's whether or not you want to reverse the heart disease you likely already have. So why do I always focus on things like heart disease? Well, first of all, here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, broadcasting on KCIW 100.7 FM on your radio dial out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, We're interested in evidence-based nutrition. I said it earlier and I'll say it again. I'm not a doctor and I'm not a scientist. I'm a nutrition nerd. I'm into this stuff. I read about it. I study about it all the time. And I'm delivering this information to you because it's the evidence-based aspect of it that I like. I like the idea that I don't have to be a scientist to read the science. I don't have to be a scientist or, you know, a doctor to understand what's happening with my body. And again, coming back to that metaphor that we talked about earlier, I would not drink gasoline. I already know what gasoline would do to me. I mean, just the smell of gasoline hurts my throat. I can't even imagine what it would feel like going down. I don't really need to read the science on that or look for the evidence on that to know if it's true or not that gasoline would hurt. But I might have to read the science or look at the evidence to find out if French fries hurt or if milk hurts. It might feel good going down. It might even taste good. Hey, I love French fries. They're great. They're awesome. They're not so great for you and they're not so awesome for your health. But when we get down to the evidence, that's where we get to use science and medical information to make better decisions in the day. So when we get the chance to reverse heart disease we likely already have, the next question is, well, is that even possible? Could you actually reverse heart disease? When researchers took people with heart disease and put them on the kind of plant-based diet followed by populations that did not get epidemic heart disease, their hope was that it might slow the disease process down, maybe even stop it. But instead, something miraculous happened. So remember, we were talking about, I just want to clarify this. Researchers took people with heart disease. They put them on the kind of plant-based diet followed by populations that did not get epidemic heart disease, and they hoped that the disease might slow down, maybe even stop. But instead, something miraculous happened. What happened? The disease started to reverse, to get better. As soon as patients stopped eating artery-clogging diets, their bodies were able to start dissolving some of the plaque away, opening up arteries without drugs, without surgery, suggesting their bodies wanted to heal all along but were just never given the chance. Can you believe that? That improvement in blood flow to the heart muscle itself was after just 3 weeks of eating healthy. Could you even imagine if you're sitting here listening and you have heart disease or someone you love has heart disease, could you imagine telling them that they could improve their own heart disease condition in as few as 21 days? Isn't that amazing? So Dr. Greger says, let me share with you what's been called the best kept secret in medicine. The best kept secret in medicine is that sometimes, given the right conditions, the body can heal itself. Now, this is interesting. I love this analogy, and you've heard me talk about this before because I've shared this very same information with you before, and pretty much every time you get on the Ocean Mist Power Hour that we're talking about nutrition, you're going to hear me say a few things, and you're going to say, she says that every time, and I'm going to say, that's right. I say it every time, and I'm going to also tell you this. I talk fast, so you better listen fast because you might want to write some stuff down even, right? Look, every bite of food you take is either fighting disease or feeding disease. Think about that. Think about a red light, green light, yellow light strategy before you put the food in your mouth. And it's hard because everything tells us to eat. Everything, every commercial, every advertisement, everything. You remember back in the day when you used to go to the car lot and buy a brand new car? It automatically came with ashtrays. Isn't that a trip? Automatically came with ashtrays. Now that is a special option you have to order now. You have to order ashtrays in your car. But guess what? Every car comes with cup holders. Why? Because we're all drinking these giant things from 7-Eleven and Circle K, and we're having Slurpees and Slushies and Frappies and, oh, God knows what, shakes and just sugar and fat and yuck. And every car now comes with cup holders. But listen to this. If you whack your shin really hard on a coffee table, it can get all red, hot, painful, swollen, inflamed, but it will heal naturally if you just stand back and let your body work its magic. But what if you kept whacking your shin in the same place day after day? In fact, 3 times a day, well, you know, like maybe breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it would never heal. And you would go to your doctor, you'd be like, oh, doctor, my shin hurts. And the doctor would be like, no problem. They'd whip out their pad, write you a prescription for painkillers, and you'd still be whacking your shin 3 times a day. Oh, it still really hurts like heck, but oh, it feels so much better with those pain pills on board. Wow, thank heavens for modern medicine. Well, you know what? It's like when people take nitroglycerin for crushing chest pain. Tremendous relief. But you're not doing anything to treat the underlying cause. The underlying cause. Our body wants to come back to health if we let it. But if we keep re-damaging ourselves three times a day, we may never heal. Right? I mean, that sounds so crazy. Like, no one's going to go whack their shin against the table three times a day every day. No one's going to do that. But we do it with our fingers and our forks and the food to our face every day. A lot of us do. I mean, look around. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's your family. We all have a tendency in our society to eat the standard American diet. It's literally been fed to us, right? It's been promoted to us. It's been fed to us. It's been encouraged. It's crazy. And our body does want to come back to health if we let it. We can't keep damaging ourselves every day, all day, every day. Now, Dr. Greger says one of the most amazing things he learned in all of his medical training was that within about 15 years of stopping smoking, your lung cancer risk approaches that of a lifelong non-smoker. Isn't that amazing? Your lungs can clear out all that tar, and eventually, it's almost as if you never started smoking at all. Now, come on. How many of us smoked? I did, like, I don't know, age 15, 16, maybe 16 to probably 21, probably 5 years. Ew, gross, ew. I can't even imagine being a smoker anymore. I'm like, oh, gross. But you know what? That's back in the days when, remember, we were talking about it earlier, cars came with cigarette ashtrays in the car. Oh, and that little electric lighter. I mean, they had to make it super convenient for you to smoke, right? So I smoked. And now, God, that's been, I don't know, decades ago. I guess I quit about 39 years ago, if I had to do the math. Long, long time. So hopefully that means my lungs are as clear as if I never started smoking ever. But every morning of our smoking life, the healing process has already started. So if you're a smoker, during the night, your body says, oh, yes, there's been no cigarettes for an hour, 2 hours, 10 hours. Maybe you get 10 hours of sleep a night. If you do, yay for you. That's awesome. But that healing process has started until wham, the first cigarette of the day re-injures your lungs with every puff, just like we can re-injure our arteries with every bite. When all we had to do all along, the miracle cure, is just stand back, get out of the way, stop re-damaging ourselves, and let our body's natural healing processes bring us back toward health. Because the human body is a self-healing machine. Isn't that amazing? I love that. I love that your body is a self-healing machine. A couple days ago, I had a gut ache. And I said to Gary, God, Gary's my husband. You guys know that. And I said, God, I have this gut ache. It's bugging me. I don't know what I've eaten. I hadn't eaten anything weird. And I said, you know, bro, I'm going to do what animals do when they have a gut ache or when they don't feel good. Animals, they back down, they rest, and they don't eat. Now, I've noticed that. Animals don't eat when they don't feel good. So I didn't eat. I took about 24 hours off. I just drank water, and I felt fantastic. In fact, the morning after that whole thing, so like on hour number 22 or so, I woke up, and I felt so incredibly alive and fresh and energetic. I leaped out of bed. I was like, wow, I can't believe how great I feel. And it's just amazing because our human body is a self-healing machine. So what about if you say, oh yeah, well, I could choose moderation. You know, I could hit myself with a smaller hammer, but why would you beat yourself up at all? Dr. Greger says, I don't tell my smoking patients to cut down to a half a pack a day. I tell them to quit. Sure, a half a pack is better than two packs a day, but we should try to only put healthy things in our mouths. Now, we've known about this for decades, right? The American Heart Journal in 1977 talked about a case with Mr. F.W. who had heart disease so bad, he couldn't even make it to the mailbox. But he started eating healthier, and a few months later, he was climbing mountains without pain. That's amazing. There are all these fancy new anti-angina, anti-chest pain drugs out now. They cost thousands of dollars a year. But at the highest dose, may be able to prolong exercise duration as long as 33 and a half seconds. It doesn't look like those choosing the drug route are going to be climbing mountains anytime soon. You see, plant-based diets aren't just safer and cheaper, they can work better because you're treating the actual cause of the disease. That's so awesome. I love to hear that. You know, that's what I love about evidence-based nutrition, right? We just heard about the guy who went from having crushing pain, changed his diet, started climbing mountains. Or you could hear the other people who are taking medicine and they're not really getting better. They're getting an extra 30 seconds out of an exercise regimen. Like, what's the difference? Oh, I could do 30 more seconds on the treadmill, or I could climb mountains. I'll take the mountains any day. Now, what about heart rate? You know, this is an interesting thing. I want to talk about the best food for slowing your resting heart rate. Dr. Greger says that monitoring your resting heart rate has strong advantages. Taking your pulse is cheap. It takes very little time, and it's understandable to people, and it's something everyone can do at home to measure their progress to become an active participant in their own health management. He says the accumulated weight of evidence linking elevated resting heart rate to cardiovascular and all-cause mortality, that is, to a shortened lifespan, even in apparently healthy individuals, makes a very strong case for it to be considered in the assessment of cardiovascular risk. So what did all that mean? Let's just say that in plain English. A slower heart rate is healthier. A faster heart rate is kind of burning up your engine. So here's how you do it. Every 10 beat per minute increase is associated with a 10 to 20% increase in the risk of premature death. Wow. There seems to be a continuous increase in risk with increasing heart rate, at least for values above a beat per second. So we can simply look at our watch or the timer on our smartphone, and if our heart is beating faster than the seconds going by, especially when we're sitting quiet, then we have to do something about it. So what does that mean? You want about 60 beats per minute, right? About. This is particularly important when we start getting up to around 80 or 90 beats per minute. Now, he has a video called Slow Your Beating Heart, Beans versus Exercise, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. And in that video, he says that men with no apparent evidence of heart disease who have a pulse of 90 may have 5 times higher risk of sudden cardiac death compared to those in the safety zone. So to put it bluntly, their first symptom is their last. In other words, they have a heart attack and they die. Boom. Oh, I had a heart attack. I died. I didn't even know I had heart disease. Boom. It just goes like that. Indeed, Dr. Greger says resting heart rates around 90 beats per minute increase heart disease risk at a level similar to smoking. Wow, that's just crazy. Well, we're going to learn about how to get the heart rate down, because this episode of the Ocean Mist Power Hour is about how not to die from heart disease. We don't see our heart in there. We don't even really know what's in there. I mean, we know, right? Because we've seen pictures and magazines, and maybe you have an anatomy and physiology book at home. I don't know about you, but I'm a weirdo. I keep that kind of stuff. Like, I went out and bought an anatomy and physiology textbook and workbook, not because I was in medical school, just because I'm a freak about this kind of stuff. Not only am I a nutrition nerd, but I want to see what's in my body. So if I have an owie on my bottom left 2/3 quartile section of my abdomen, I want to be able to like open up the book and dig down and dig deep and then go, oh, boom, that's the XYZ, whatever it is. So I know I'm weird, but you can find pictures of your heart. So here's the thing. If you ask most doctors, though, 90 beats per minute may be considered normal. The accepted limits of heart rate have long been set at between 60 to 100 beats per minute. Well, where did that range come from? It was adopted as a matter of convenience, simply based on the scale of the squares on EKG paper. Oh my gosh, that is just crazy. It was a historical accident, like the QWERTY keyboard. That's the QWERTY keyboard that just became the norm. So a heart rate of 60 to 100 doesn't even represent the bell curve. So a group of cardiologists measured the heart rate of 500 people and concluded that 45 to 95 beats per minute was a better definition of normal, rounding out 50 to 90, which a survey of leading cardiologists concurred with. Now, we know that normal doesn't necessarily mean optimal, but doctors shouldn't be telling people with heart rates in the 50s that their heart rate is too low. In fact, these people may be right where they should be. Now, certainly a heart rate higher than 80 beats per minute should ring an alarm bell, but what can we do about it? This is awesome. Exercise is one obvious possibility. Check this out. Ironically, we make our heart go faster, so the rest of the time it beats slower. So that always just kind of freaked me out. I'm like, so let me get this right. Like, I'm going to get on a treadmill or an elliptical machine or something, and I'm going to whack out a bunch of exercise, and my heart rate's going to go up to like 150, 140, something like that. It'll beep, 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 and I'm going to sweat like a big dog. And then when I'm all done, my heart goes, oh, that was really good. And it's going to take a rest. And yes, that's exactly what happens. You think about it. If you're working out 30 minutes a day and then you're resting, technically resting, or not working out 23 hours and 30 minutes a day, those 23 hours and 30 minutes of slower heart rate it's lowered, first of all, because of the exercise, but the lower heart rate is also a longer period of time. So yes, you make your heart go faster to make it beat slower. Now, the public health benefits of physical exercise, especially for heart protection, are widely accepted. So among the many biological mechanisms proposed to account for this risk-reducing effect is the autonomic nervous system regulation of the heart. That is, our brain's ability to slow down the resting beat of our heart. So if you put people through a 12-week aerobic conditioning program of cycling, Stairmaster, running on a treadmill, their resting heart rate can drop from around 69 to about 66, about a 3-beat-per-minute drop. Of course, they have to keep it up, so stop exercising and the resting heart rate goes right back up. You know, this sounds defeating, doesn't it? It's like, what? I'm going to go to 12 weeks of exercise? Who likes exercise? 12 weeks? And I'm going to get a 3-beat-per-second? Wait till I tell you what comes next. You're going to love it. So if you're here with me, yay, you're on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. We're talking about how not to die. We're on KCIW 100.7 FM, Curry Coast Community Radio, broadcasting out of the most magnificent place in the world, which is Brookings Harbor, Oregon. So exercise is only one way to drop our heart rate, though. The way to our heart may also be through our stomach. Yes, this is true, and this is cool. What if instead of 3 months of exercise, we did 3 months of beans, like a cup a day of beans, chickpeas, or lentil? What? Well, check this out. The first randomized controlled trial of beans for the treatment of diabetes showed that they did indeed successfully improve blood sugar control. They dropped the average subject's A1C level from 7.4 to 6.9. That's huge. If you've got any kind of diabetes, you know that's a giant drop from 7.4 to 6.9. But this study was also the first to assess the effect of bean consumption on heart rate, and indeed one of the few to determine the effect on heart rate of any dietary intervention. This is particularly important in diabetics, since having a higher resting heart rate not only increases their risk of death, as it does for everybody, but it also appears to predict greater risk of diabetic complications, such as damage to the nerves and eyes. Wow. You know, if you're dealing with diabetes, I'm so sorry. I can imagine that you're frustrated and you're tired, and maybe you're dealing with diabetic neuropathy, in which case, boogie over to kciw.org and look up the Ocean Mist Power Hour episode on reversing diabetes. So much valuable information in there. There's hope for you. And literally within a couple of days of changing your eating style, you can begin to feel better. Couple days. I'm not even talking 21 days. I'm not even talking 7 days. I'm talking 4 days. Change your body and your diseases will also change. Okay, so how about beans? How did the beans do in this study? Well, Dr. Greger says that the beans produced a 3.4 beat drop in heart rate, just as much as 250 hours on a treadmill. A cup of beans a day or 250 hours on a treadmill. I'll take the beans. Thank you very much. We're not sure why beans are as powerful as exercise in bringing down one's resting heart rate. Dr. Greger says, in addition to the potential direct beneficial effects of vegetable protein and fiber, all the good stuff in legumes, there's also the potential displacement value of vegetable protein foods in reducing animal protein foods, which are higher in saturated fat and cholesterol. He says, regardless of it, we should all consider eating pulses for our pulse. So, you know, beans are called pulses. They're called legumes. They're called pulses. So eat your pulses for your pulse. Man, I just think that's amazing. When I think about that, you know, a little bit of beans every day versus getting on a treadmill. You know, you've been with me here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. You know that it's a struggle for me to just be like, wake up in the morning and be like, yeah, I want to exercise. Like if I had the choice between read a book or get on the treadmill, I want to read. Take a hike or study nutrition, I want to study. You know, I tend to be a little more sedentary. I don't like that about myself. It's something I'm interested and eager to change in myself. But then when I think about it, if I wanted to change my heart rate, if I could do a dual strategy, what if I could do two things? Have a little bit of beans every single day and up my exercise quotient a little bit. Look, 30 minutes a day, I'm getting there. I've got all my exercise equipment and I'm doing it. I am. I dance in the living room and I take the stairs up and down as many times a day as I can. And if you live in a two-story place, do it too. Like take as many times up the stairs and down as you can. And, you know, I've got the Pilates machine, which I got for super cheap. I found on the Facebook Marketplace or something for like $100. It was awesome. And I have an elliptical trainer. Again, something super inexpensive. I drove up to Gold Beach. Some lady was selling it for $90. Bam. And I also have a desk. Here's the worst thing. I have a desk that is a stand-up desk. So it's tall. I'm a tall person. So it's a tall desk. And I have a treadmill underneath it. So I have literally zero excuses. Like I can actually study while I do my workout. I just have to get my workout on and I have to eat better, which we all do, right? We all have to do it. What are some other things you could do to add some extra exercise into your day? How about instead of finding the closest parking space, make it your business to find the furthest parking space? How about instead of parking at the post office, park a block away intentionally, like park away intentionally and then walk a little further? How about when you go down to the port to watch the waves? First of all, don't take your DQ with you or your Mickey D's or your BK. Just don't do that. Maybe take an apple with you or maybe take nothing, a bottle of water. And how about you walk the whole length of the port? A friend of mine told me today that he's now up to walking the whole length of the port and he's excited about it. And he's regaining his health every day by making little steps. So that's really super cool. All right. So, let's talk about this whole slowing your heart rate thing. You know, I kind of feel like we talked about all of this, so I'm not going to read that information. I'm going to talk a little bit further because we really truly did talk about beans and everything. But what about moderation? What about moderation? You know, what about this question of everything in moderation? Because everybody says that. Well, everything's fine in moderation, right? Everything in moderation. Really? Even heart disease? Is heart disease okay in moderation? Dr. Greger says, what if we don't just want low risk for heart attack? What about no risk? One great stumbling block has been that government and national health organizations appear to have taken the patronizing view that the public can't handle the truth or would rather the science be watered down. Oh my God. Just as Dr. Esselstyn wrote in Cleveland Clinic Journal of Medicine, in cholesterol lowering, moderation kills. Even if all Americans kept their total cholesterol below 200 milligrams per deciliter, millions would develop coronary artery disease. So strong evidence showed that we need to keep our total cholesterol under 150 to stem America's epidemic of coronary artery disease. Well, what kind of evidence? Well, in many cultures, coronary artery disease is practically unheard of when total serum cholesterol levels are under 150 milligrams per deciliter. And here in the U.S., in the infamous Framingham Heart Study, few of those with levels below 150 developed heart disease, and none of them died from it. Now, I've told you before that you can always find charts and graphs. So when you go on to nutritionfacts.org, and again, this is the life work of Dr. Michael Greger, who does this as a labor of love in respect and honor for his grandmother, who lived an additional 31 years after literally being sent home to die with heart disease. That's why this is such a passion project for Dr. Greger. And it's a big passion project for me. I have family members that literally are on massive amounts of medication, heart disease medication. And, you know, they'll say, well, my cardiologist said XYZ. And I bite my tongue. I'll tell you what, I want to talk to my family members so bad. And I do. I talk to them. And you know what? They don't buy it. And that's okay. I get it. I think they look at me and they're like, you're not a doctor. You're not a scientist. That's fine. I get it. And I'm telling you right now on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. But what I do is I look at the evidence. And I'm encouraging you to look at the evidence. So if I tell you about something and you want to know more about it, you're going to go to nutritionfacts.org and you're going to look up this information. So in this case, look up, go to nutritionfacts.org and put in the search bar, everything in moderation. And you can see this particular information. So he says, here's data from the 26-year follow-up of the Framingham Heart Study. The cholesterol levels of people that get heart attacks and the cholesterol levels of those who don't. Because we know that 35% of heart attacks occur in people with total cholesterol levels between 150 and 200 and a target level of only 200 guarantees that millions of U.S. citizens will perish of coronary disease. Why would we even put ourselves in that situation? Comes back to this idea of whacking our shin on the coffee table day after day after day after day after day after day. You wouldn't do it. Your body, as we've already heard today, is a self-healing miracle. It's a self-healing, miraculous machine. And if we just give it all the tools it needs, it's ready to help and start healing. There's no reason to die of coronary artery disease. We cannot continue to have public and private organizations on the forefront of health leadership recommend to the public a dietary plan that guarantees that millions will perish from the very disease the guidelines were supposed to prevent. So what is this saying? Dr. Greger is saying, look, a lot of the doctors are out there saying, well, we just don't think people are going to agree with, you know, reducing animal products. And well, we just don't think people have the appetite, pun fully intended, to change their diet, you know. So they started out this whole dietary approach to something hypertension, the DASH diet. And the doctors who created it said, we just don't think people are willing to make the kind of change that they really have to get, you know, to make heart disease go away. Well, with its lack of fiber and antioxidants in the standard American diet and its emphasis on animal protein, fat, and extreme free radical production, the U.S. diet, also known as the Standard American Diet, aka SAD, is largely responsible for our bitter harvest of chronic diseases. Man, that's so powerful. I'm going to read that again. With its lack of fiber and antioxidants, and an emphasis on animal protein, fat, and extreme free radical production, the U.S. diet is largely responsible for our bitter harvest of chronic diseases. Wow. If the coronary artery disease epidemic is seen as a raging fire and cholesterol and fats are the fuels, then the American Heart Association has merely recommended cutting the flow of fuel. The only tenable solution is to cut off the fuel supply altogether by reducing cholesterol levels to those proven to prevent coronary disease. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Man, that's crazy. Cut off the fuel supply altogether. Look, your body already makes cholesterol. Your body makes it. So when you know that your body makes cholesterol, there's no reason, and your body needs cholesterol. That's the trippy part, right? Your body needs it and it makes it. But when we add cholesterol into our body through all the various animal products that we eat, we're adding insult to injury, and we're adding injury on top of injury on top of injury and causing these diseases in our own bodies. Wow. Well, this is important to me to talk for a minute about diabetes, because it's a big issue. And I'm coming to this again because the idea that diabetes and heart disease are related, that's not a, you know, you don't have to take a big leap to figure out that if you're diabetic, you likely have some heart issues as well. But this is interesting. What about this? Dr. Greger says, well, how did doctors treat diabetes before insulin? Well, almost 1,000 medicinal plants were described as anti-diabetic agents, most of which have been used in traditional medicine, and these included beans. Now, look, we already talked about beans today. We know that beans every day, a cup, a half cup even, can slow down your heart rate, and we know that a resting heart rate is going to be healthy for you in the long run. Now, of course, just because something has been used for centuries doesn't mean it's safe. Other treatments for diabetes have included arsenic and uranium. So thankfully, many of these remedies fell by the wayside. But scientific interest in the anti-diabetic potential of beans never vanished completely and even has been raised in the past decade. Dr. Greger says health authorities from all over the world universally recommend increasing the consumption of whole grains and legumes for health-promoting diets. And one of the reasons is that they may decrease insulin resistance, which is the defining trait of type 2 diabetes. What is type 2 diabetes? That's the kind you get when you're not born with it. They used to actually call it adult onset diabetes. They don't call it adult onset anymore because now kids get it. Kids, little kids, little kids. I mean, could you imagine we're feeding our children the standard American diet? They're getting artery clogging. We already heard today that they're having fatty streaks in their hearts and their arteries by age 10. They're having health problems from this diet. And now even little kids are getting type 2 diabetes. Type 2 because it can't be called adult onset anymore. Look, diabetes, according to Dr. Greger, is a global public health epidemic. Although Oral hypoglycemic medications and injected insulin are the mainstay treatments of diabetes and are effective in controlling high blood sugars, they have prominent side effects, and they also fail to significantly alter the course of diabetic complications because common side effects include weight gain, swelling, and liver disease. Dr. Greger says, I want to emphasize that second part. He says the mainstay of diabetic treatment fails to significantly alter the course of diabetic complications. Well, shouldn't that be the whole point of the treatment? Thankfully, he says, lifestyle modifications have proven to be greatly effective in the management of this disease. And if there's one thing diabetics should eat, it's legumes, beans, chickpeas, split peas, and lentils. Those are all super easy to come by. In fact, you know, you can buy those things in cans, ready to go. Like you buy the can, drop it in a pan, heat it up, and you can eat it. And you might say, oh, well, that's expensive. No, beans are super inexpensive. But then if you go into the grocery store, you can buy dried beans in bags, and then you can reconstitute them. So you soak them on your counter overnight. And like you can get 5 pounds of dried chickpeas for super low amount of money, like a couple bucks. And then you're going to have that every day for, you know, a half a cup every day. They're so easy on your body. They're so healthy for you. And you're like, well, what if I get gas? Well, you might. You might get gas. Okay, big deal. You got a little gas. Big deal. You're doing away with diabetes. You're doing away with heart disease. You know, would you want to have a good heart or a fart? You know, come on. I mean, I know that sounds a little crazy, but I'm trying to make a point to you here. Like a little bit of beans can be really helpful to you. Check it out. The European Association for the Study of Diabetes, the Canadian Diabetes Association, and the American Diabetes Association all recommend the consumption of dietary pulses, remember pulses are beans, as a means of optimizing diabetes control. What are pulses? They're peas and beans that come dried, so they're a subset of legumes. So excluding green beans and fresh green peas, which are considered more like vegetable crops, and also excluding the so-called oil seeds like soybeans and peanuts. Okay, so pulses, you're looking at all those things we talked about earlier, legumes, beans, chickpeas, split peas, lentils. A review compiled 41 randomized controlled experimental trials, including more than 1,000 patients, and it corroborated the official Diabetes Association nutrition guidelines recommending the consumption of pulses as a means of optimizing diabetes control. Any better than any of the others? Well, some of the strongest evidence came from the studies that used chickpeas. Those are garbanzo beans, right? Garbanzo beans, chickpeas, same, same. And in terms of beans, pintos and black beans may beat out kidney beans. So compared to the blood sugar spike of straight white rice, black beans and rice and pinto beans and rice appeared to beat out kidney beans and rice. This may be because dark red kidney beans can have lower levels of indigestible starch. One of the reasons beans are so healthy is that they contain compounds that partially block our starch digesting enzyme, which allows some starch to make it down to our colon to feed our good gut bacteria. And in fact, Dr. Greger says, the inhibition of this starch-eating enzyme, amylase, just by eating beans approximates that of carb-blocking drug called Acarbose, sold as Precoce, quote, a popular diabetes medication. Wow, that's pretty amazing. So beans do the same as a popular diabetes medication. That's crazy. The long-term use of beans may normalize hemoglobin A1C levels, which is how you track diabetes, almost as well as the drug, without side effects, with names like acute generalized exanthemas pulsatosis. I can't even read what that says. Ooh, pustulosis. Ooh, that's gross. Here's the crazy thing about it. You can eat your way to health and you can eat your way to disease. And I think, you know, when it comes right down to it, the thing I always want to share with you on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, whenever we're talking about nutrition, is your fingers, your fork, your food, your face, and the you factor. There's five F's there: fingers, fork, food, face, you factor. You're the factor. You get to decide what you put in your mouth. And every bite of food you take is either fighting disease or feeding disease. Gotta stop and think about it. Do I want to feed disease or fight disease? Fight it. Let's live. Let's be healthy. You know, I have a friend. He's a very highly, well, you know him, John Maxwell. He's a super highly well-known leadership author, and he happens to be my business partner. And he says the craziest thing. We were talking one day, and he said, "Well, you know, Misty, most people are already dead; they just don't know it." I was kind of shocked. I was like, "John, what are you talking about?" He said, "Most people run their lives as if they're already dead. They don't take any risks. They don't take any action. They just live life by default." And then he said, "You know, you have to design a better life, and designing takes work, and that's a little harder. And most people aren't really ready, willing, and able to take the effort to design their lives. So don't do that. You're alive right now. Be alive. I'll tell you what, as long as I'm living, I want to live, man. I want to go. I want to do. I want to be. I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to share." And I hope that's what you hear when you join in on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I hope you hear that I want to share with you fun, fascinating. It might not be fun. Let's change that. It's not fun. And it might not be fascinating, but it is factual. I want to share with you factual, evidence-based nutrition information that can change your life. You do not have to live your life by default. You have the power to live your life by design, and you can design a much better life. If you're uncomfortable, if you're in pain, if you are disease-ridden, you can change that. You can create disease, and you can discreate disease, and you can start by what you put on the end of your fork, how you put it into your mouth with your fingers, the food, your face, your fork, your fingers, the U factor, it's up to you. So, wow. You always know if you're checking in on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, you always know you're going to get a rant. There was the rant, okay? I didn't rant this time. I thought I did pretty good. There were no rants. So really appreciate you checking in here and joining me on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I have a lot of fun with this show. You know, I like to say that this is a supreme selection of everyday deliciousness in language, learning, and growth. And again, I'm your host, Misty Young. I'm broadcasting here on the Ocean Mist Power Hour from Brookings Harbor, the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. This is about as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. It is the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. A lot of them work right here at KCIW. And we're all volunteers. This place is where the mountains and the old-growth redwoods meet the sea. Harbor Brookings is home to me. And thank you again to the entire crew here, the sound engineering and production crew, and those folks that are behind the scenes doing our news broadcasts and raising money and keeping the place clean and the lights on and all of that. Thank you to KCIW folks for helping make Curry Coast Community Radio a place that you can come and learn about nutrition. I'm Misty Young. I'll see you again soon on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.